This month's podcast features the three officers of the JFY Network's Board of Directors. They come from a variety of backgrounds and provide their insight and expertise to the staff of JFY. All long-term members, their combined years of service to JFY add up to over 75 years. In this podcast, you'll hear from Chairman Otis Gates as he recounts some of the history of JFY's transformation over the years.
And around 2000 was when we began to look at software that would become available for use in schools. So we were pioneers, I guess, in that area. There are other people in some places working on that, but we were the only ones in this area that I know of that were doing that.
Treasurer Kevin McDonald, as he shares his thoughts about JFY's efforts this year.
I think that our students are still learning. They're not in our classrooms anymore, but they're the setup is definitely different than it was back in 1998, but we're still bringing a lot to the table. It's different, but we're bringing a lot to the table, and the students are still learning, and it's the application of what we're doing is still providing opportunities that they may not have otherwise.
And Secretary Susan Dunnigan, as she looks towards the future for JFY.
Some school systems have greater limitations than others, and if we can make a difference there with technology, I love the idea that we can use technology. We can expand endlessly, through technology in ways that we could never do before.
This podcast was created by JFY Networks, a Boston-based nonprofit provider of online learning resources, training, and support. JFY's individualized self-paced curricula help raise individual and school performance by maintaining grade-level skills and combating learning loss. JFY provides online curricula aligned to state and college standards from grade 5 through high school, with on-call personal support for teachers online and via phone, text, and email from friendly learning specialists like yours truly. JFY also supports early college and dual enrollment high school programs, providing supplemental online instruction, resources, and guidance to help ensure student success and smooth transition into post-secondary education and training. For JFY Networks, I'm Greg Cunningham. JFY Networks was founded in 1976 under the name Jobs for Youth to help urban young people gain the skills needed for viable employment in our high-tech economy. The board of directors of a nonprofit is the foundation of the organization. Board members serve as custodians of its values and mission. JFY is fortunate to have senior board officers whose personal values align with the mission and whose longevity in office gives them the historical perspective to understand JFY's relation to the social and economic conditions of the times. Board Chairman Otis Gates is the longest-serving board member, having joined in 1980. Otis is the founder of UHM Properties, formerly United Housing Management, the largest minority-owned developer, owner, and manager of affordable housing in Boston, founded in 2003. Otis grew up in Roxbury and graduated from Boston Latin, Harvard College, and Harvard Business School before beginning his business career. He has been a board member of JFY since 1980. In a recent conversation with Executive Director Gary Kaplan, he recounts his 40-year journey with JFY Networks through the organization's many self-reinventions.
We're going to begin with Otis Gates, our chairman, who has been on the board since 1980. Otis, how did you initially become aware of and affiliated with JFY?
I was contacted by one of the board members whom I'd worked with on the, Youth Services Committee of the United Way. We were in charge of giving United Way funds to support youth services, Boy Scouts, Girls Clubs, that sort of thing, and other youth organizations. And she was on the board and invited, I think it was the publisher of the Globe at the time, one of the Taylors, this board member, whose name I don't recall, She was on the board, both of them were on the board of JFY, and invited me to join the organization.
And Otis, what was it that interested you about the organization at that time?
Well,
that's 40 years ago.
As they explained the organization, they were helping young people get their first jobs. You know, coming out of high school, understanding the kind of protocol that you had to have in order to get a job, you know, how to dress, the things to say and that sort of thing. And that was the main focus of what was then called Jobs for Youth.
And that was an issue, a cause that concerned you at that time.
Well, of course. I mean, I was involved in the youth services area. And so this was just a continuation of the same thing, but working more directly with an organization that touched the young people.
And what is it? Now, we've changed quite a bit in the intervening years. We're no longer doing the exact same thing that we were doing in 1980. What is it that keeps you connected to JFY?
Well, you know, shortly, you know, after being there for a while, about 4 or 5 years on, it became pretty clear to us that the real difficulty in getting jobs was education. And so we began to focus on education. We brought that into we added that to the service that we were trying to provide. You know, I was very fortunate to go to one of those exam school that everyone wants to get into, Boston Latin, and then on to Harvard. And it struck me that that was very fortunate for me. And I didn't understand why the other schools weren't as good as, you know, there are lots of other students who as smart as me and much smarter than me, whom I knew and who didn't go to those schools and didn't do quite as well as I did. And I didn't think that was fair or right. And there had to be something we could do about it. And, you know, I eventually began working in the area of computers and, you know, then for about 20 years I did that. And I could see that what we were doing there could eventually have some impact on delivering education to students.
Otis, where was that?
Oh, I was a consultant at Arthur Anderson. It's now Accenture. I did that for almost 20 years.
And you saw that it could do something with education?
Well, you know, a lot of time passed before we got to that. I think, you know, it wasn't until around, 1990 in the 90s and around 2000 that we started to really focus on education at Jobs for Youth. And around 2000 was when we began to look at software that had become available for use in schools. So we were pioneers, I guess, in that area. There are other people in some places working on that, but we were the only ones in this area that I know of that were doing that. We began to work more directly with schools. In fact, we had not just schools here in the Massachusetts area, but we also worked with some organizations as far away as Chicago, Washington, D.C., and other places. We even had a consulting arrangement with some other organizations that were doing similar things. So that's really what happened.
We have a school now in Washington, D.C., and another one outside of Pittsburgh.
And we recently had one in Texas. So
That's right. So what is it about the organization that keeps you connected?
Well, you know, early on, before we got to the point that we are now doing distance learning, the students that we served came to Jobs for Youth. They came to JFY, and we had a graduation ceremony. And the graduation ceremony for the programs that we had was absolutely amazing. The students who were graduating would bring members of their family. You'd think they'd won the Super Bowl when they got their diploma, because these students were the ones who were left behind. This was an accomplishment to get that diploma or to finish the program that JFY was providing. We got high school students, some students got high school diplomas, others got jobs because we had a job training program that we used to work on that got hazmat jobs. And in fact, I'll just give you one example of the kind of thing that happened. There was a young woman who came to us as a single mother. She went through the GED program and got her high school diploma. And then she finished the hazmat program. And eventually she had gotten a job over at MIT working on the human genome. And she came back to us as one of the speakers at our graduation. She was explaining what the human genome was about because she'd risen to the level of a supervisor. And she said she was so shy and lacked such confidence. If there were more than two people in the room, she wouldn't open her mouth. Just seeing that kind of thing is what makes it worthwhile. And so, I mean, sometimes it feels like we're kind of out with a spoon trying to shovel sand on the ocean there. But I can tell you that one grain of sand, one individual, makes it worthwhile being in an organization that can help someone that way. We have other examples of that. There are several others that I could cite, but that's the thing. That's the reward that you get for doing the kind of work that we do. Because there are because the problem is that we have a great many talented people. Talent is everywhere. It's distributed randomly. And it's not distributed on the basis of exam schools and the rest of that. So the problem is, how do you get that talent forward so that we can all benefit from what these people have to offer us? That's what keeps me connected.
What do you think, when you look into the future, what do you think the future of JFY looks like?
Well, I think it looks great. I mean, you know, just the fact that we've survived for over 40 years as this organization is an unbelievable thing to me. I've seen a lot of organizations, nonprofit organizations like ours, that have just disappeared. So given that we've survived, I would hope that those who come on after us can continue this, because the opportunity is great and the need is great. We have the tools that can help us move forward. So, and I think this experience with COVID has brought people forward we've had a lot of challenges there, personal and organizationally and so on, but it's provided an opportunity to learn, to get familiar with the new technology and to see what advantages there are in it for you. There are certainly problems with it, but there's some things that were good that can be helpful and that can be used. And people are no longer teachers and other adults are no longer afraid of this technology. It's here to stay. And they've learned how to use it. So I think that is one less hurdle that we'll have to try to overcome as we try to deliver our service. So I think the future is bright. And it's just you've just reported in our meeting, you know, the word is out there to the schools. They understand. And so we're getting some responses from places we've never heard from before. So I think the future for us is positive.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I have to say I agree with you. Thank you, Otis. Thank you. You have the longest historical... Actually, you've even been here longer than I have.
Kevin McDonald has been a member of the JFY board since 1998. As a longtime CPA with extensive nonprofit experience, he brings vital expertise to the organization to help navigate the complex and changing regulatory environment. Born and bred in Boston, his deep personal knowledge of the city's history and social evolution have honed his commitment to workforce and educational equity, the root of his attachment to JFY. He is a graduate of Boston College and Bentley University. He and Gary begin their discussion with how Kevin became a JFY board member.
Kevin, you've been around around the block a few times too. You came on in 1998, which coincidentally is right at the beginning of our technology era. How did you initially become aware of the organization and get affiliated?
I guess I was similar to Otis. I had been approached or recruited by two members of the board, one that I knew mostly professionally and the other one I knew mostly personally. Joe Marr, who was an attorney that I worked with, and Dan Sullivan, who had just retired from Goldman Sachs and was starting to kind of go on to the second phase of his business, professional and personal career. So they both knew me from different places and I think independent of each other had thought that I might be a good fit. So, and that was in 1998. So I came, went to first meeting, was intrigued. I've been here ever since.
What was it about the work of the organization that attracted you and why, you know, how does it keep you connected?
When I first joined, that was the time when, as you had said, with the JFY was just starting to get over into the technology, but still had the programs that were job readiness programs. And I had two teenagers at the time that were, you know, working after school jobs and just working to gain a little spending money and a little responsibility in doing it. My son had a job at a coffee shop and he needed to, I think he was going to play a sport the next term or something, so he couldn't continue with the job. So he gave them 2 weeks notice. And of course, in the coffee shop, they would just give you assigned times to work. And so once, and continue to pile them on. So even if you said, I can only work 20 hours a week, they just keep giving you more assignments until you finally, you know, kind of had to push back at that. And so he was working, 16 hours a week, maybe, I can't remember now, but gave them notice. And then they stopped assigning him, you know, so he gave him 2 weeks notice and they said, all right, you don't have any more assignments. So you're not, there are no more shifts for you to work. And it struck me that, you know, both of my kids were, you know, in a good situation. We're in a good high school. We're going on to, we'll be going on to good colleges afterwards. And sort of had some degree of control over what they're doing. But if somebody didn't have that, and this is the sort of treatment that they got, you know, it was just, it wasn't fair. And that really struck me, that example of my son getting, they stopped him working once he gave his notice that he was going to leave, something that I think if someone was in that same position but didn't have the opportunity, that it just wasn't fair. And anything that would help that cohort of kids have better leverage, you know, have better opportunities, is something that I thought would be valuable and something I'd want to support. It started with it wasn't just job readiness, but then it got into the technology and the way that the technology can help students learn. Maybe students that weren't able to learn in some other ways. So that's how I got involved.
That is an interesting story. So it's kind of a sense of social justice. How do you feel like when you came in, we still had programs in the building. We had the job training programs. We had the the GED program. We had the graduation ceremonies, and now we don't. How has that transition made you feel?
Well, I also share Otis' view that the graduation night was probably one of the best nights of the year. It was really a fun and a special time. I think that our students are still learning. They're not in our classrooms anymore, but they're, and you know, the setup is definitely different than it was back in 1998. But you know, we're still bringing a lot to the table. It's different, but we're bringing a lot to the table, and the students are still learning. And it's the application of what we're doing is still providing opportunities that they may not have otherwise. So, and I think that the programs that we had that we no longer continue found good homes someplace else that might have even been, you know, in the long run, more appropriate for them to be someplace else rather than our programs. So I'm good. I'm excited about the change from being a place that was housing students to going out to where the students are and working with them there.
And what is the future look like to you?
Well, I think, you know, if I was looking at in 1998 when I joined and thinking what the future might have been at that time and where it is now, we can connect the dots between the two, but it certainly wasn't a straight line. And I don't think it would be a straight line into the future. Like, who could have anticipated 2 years ago how COVID would have impacted the world? Yeah. And how we were able to maneuver through the last couple of years, and how the world and the outside world of schools will respond to using us because of how they have had to use us in the last couple of years. Some places where they never thought they would use remote, you know, they never thought they'd use the technology and learning. All of a sudden, they didn't have much of a choice. They enlisted us. It's been very beneficial for them. So I don't really know what's going to happen in the next 5 years, but surely won't be the same thing that's going on now. But I'm excited about it.
It's very interesting. If you think about it, if we were still doing job training classes and GED classes in the building, the pandemic would have put us out of business. We would have had to shut down.
That is correct. That is correct. If we had even made it that far from 1998 to 2019 to 2020, it would have put us out of business. Yes. I think there was some foresight in that. I really, you know, there was some forward thinking about some of the things that were happening and the perceived need for help in those areas. And it was a little over the horizon stuff. I mean, it wasn't really fully apparent at the time, but using the technology that we had and, you know, making an effort to till the ground really brought some opportunities to us that would, if we had sat there, they never would have happened. We just sat there and tried to continue doing what we were doing at the time. It never would have happened.
That's right. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Kevin.
When Susan Dunnigan joined the JFY board in 2003, she brought a professional view of disparities in economic opportunity developed through her successful community lending career with major Boston banks, including minority business enterprise lending. She also brought direct experience of the classroom through her previous career as a high school teacher. Susan's broad educational background ranges from a Boston University MBA to an MA in Germanic Studies from Boston College, a BA from Regis College, two Fulbright Fellowships in Marburg, and studies at four other German schools. She joined the conversation with Gary and shares some thoughts on how JFY's past may influence the future.
Now, let me turn to Susan Dunnigan, who has been on the board since 2003. So
wow.
No kidding. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? So Susan, how did you initially become aware of and get affiliated with us?
Well, I've been working at Boston Banks over the last, I don't know, 25, 30 years. And I had a colleague at a bank that I was at back then. I'm not sure if he was on the board at JFY, was involved with JFY, but he knew about my background as a former high school teacher. I had been a teacher before I went into banking. And there's a sort of ethos in the banking industry that you try to give back. You find something that matters and you spend a little volunteer time and give something back to the community. And so he suggested to me that with my background, JFY might be a good fit. We were still trying to get kids ready to step into the workforce, making sure they were prepared for it and could handle it. So he thought that would fit. It obviously did, or I feel it did. I became involved. That was Charlie Clark, by the way. But he thought it would make sense, as I say, given my background.
And your background, just give us a little bit of a sense of your background and how that connects.
Well, in some ways it doesn't connect at all. I mean, I had earned a master's degree in Germanic studies, and there are at least three or four people in the world interested in that. And I was teaching, the school that I was teaching at decided that they could not afford to support several different language programs. My principal at the time wanted me to step into social studies. I didn't want to do that. So, and one of the things about teaching, it used to really bother me every year when the school year was over, particularly when the seniors left. That was the end of it. they were gone. And I hated that. I really hated that. I hated seeing them go. So I thought something where I can work and not be as involved, really as emotionally and intensively as I was in teaching. Banking seemed to make sense. I was looking to use empirical skills as opposed to some of the soft skills that you use as a teacher. So I decided to try it, and it has worked fairly well.
Well, that is really an interesting story. So do you find that, you know, connecting your background in education to what has gone on at JFY? When you came on, it was a different organization. And here we are almost 20 years later, we're not doing the same things that we were doing when you came in.
But we are creating opportunity for students. We are creating opportunity. We're enhancing their possibilities, whether it be for further education, whether it be in the workplace. That's also been something that has mattered to me throughout my life. I grew up in a family where education was absolutely paramount. That was the most important thing you could do. I love telling the story. I have a brother who was scouted by a couple of Major League Baseball teams, and they wanted to hire him. They wanted him to bring him into their farm system at age 18. And my brother didn't have his majority at the time, so he couldn't make the decision. He had to ask my dad. He said, "Dad, can I, you know, go play baseball with the Mets or with the Orioles, whoever it was?" And he said, "Yeah, sure you can, as soon as you finish college." It was just that important. You have to get an education. He didn't have the opportunity as a child of the Depression, World War II. He just didn't have the opportunity, but he wanted his kids to enjoy that and understand that and be part of it. So I have one brother, I have one sister. Between the three of us, we have more post-secondary degrees than all of my 62 first cousins.
Wow.
I do have 62 first cousins. It's a big Irish, Boston Irish family. And that was my dad. Education was important. Creating opportunity is important. And if you can play a role and get the education, play a role in developing those opportunities, that's significant. That makes a difference.
When you look into the future, what do you see happening with us?
I see us expanding, convincing more and more people of the importance of how we do what we do, the ability to enhance educational opportunity, create opportunity for students, create maybe equality. You know, it is an equal justice kind of thing. Giving people that chance to succeed, not just to succeed, to excel, to go beyond what they might otherwise be able to do on their own. We all know that there are limitations in the school systems. Some school systems have greater limitations than others. And if we can make a difference there with technology, I love the idea that we can use technology. We can expand endlessly, well, sort of endlessly, through technology in ways that we could never do before. So we have great opportunity, I think, to continue to make a difference.
These conversations are really interesting. I mean, obviously, we all share certain basic values. One issue that everybody has mentioned is scale. We were doing great things for 30 years, but if you were doing classes in a building, you could never get to real scale. You were very limited in what you could do, how many students you could reach. Now, of course, it is just about unlimited. We're doing numbers now that we never could have done before the age of technology. But there is that problem that you don't get the direct connection with the student. You don't get that graduation ceremony. You don't get to share the family's celebration. I don't know what to do about that. I just don't know what to do about that. When I went to this thing last Wednesday night, you know, it was kind of like going to an old graduation ceremony. There were actual people there, parents, kids, and it really did have an impact. It was, you know, totally different from beaming a curriculum through the internet. I don't know what to do about that. Does anybody have any thoughts about how we could recreate or replace the emotional connection that we used to get out of actually meeting students and parents and, you know, seeing them walk across the stage and get their diploma. What could we do?
Could we maybe have an annual get together of former JFY participants to come and sort of like a success night, come and tell your story? You've been out of school for a year or 2 years or 5 years or however many years, and maybe there's 10 or 15 students from various years who come to an event that we sponsor at a central downtown location. You're right, those graduations were absolutely over the top. They were the best. They were the best. Maybe we could do something like that, though, once a year, just to, you know, come and celebrate with us and talk about JFY's future and what you've gotten from it. I think there's probably a population out there who would be willing to do that.
Well, that's a thought. That is a thought. That's a thought. We have to figure out how to reach them because, well, yeah, we have to figure out how to reach them. But that's an idea.
I agree with you, Susan. Maybe we should look into that. There are a number of people out there who we recall had some success and might be willing to come back to a celebration of kinds. That I think we need to maybe give some thought to that. Figure out how to make something happen that way. We don't have a way of tracking people, you know, so a formal way of doing it. So the first one's going to be hard. You know, that's
maybe
a good
idea. Maybe we should start tracking now, Otis.
Yeah. How do we do that? Yeah. How would we do that out of the kind of programs that we have now? It's pretty hard.
Pretty hard, probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was thinking that when we had our own facility, and people were coming to us, they knew they were going to JFY, or Jobs for Youth.
Right.
Then. Now,
they don't have that connection.
Yeah, that, exactly. They, you know, they may perceive us, if they think about us at all, as being someone that is supporting the school's effort to get, you know, get something accomplished, rather than, going to JFY. It's, well, somebody from JFY comes in and, you know, works with us a couple of days a week. So I'm just not thinking that those students would have the same connection. You know, that A, and that the reason that they were able to accomplish something was because of what we did as much as what the schools did. I think that might be an issue.
On the other side of the coin here, I can tell you honestly, folks, that you're a great gang to work with. I mean, I just really enjoy doing this, and I enjoy working with you. It's been something that's, you know, kept me interested. really, I mean, it's great, and I like the fact that we, you know, we show the results. We have records of what we do. You know, we've got very confident staff. We have the numbers to show that what we are doing works. Along with the confidence and your cheerful selves, it's been just fun.
I agree with you, Otis. This is, you know, it's a very good group.
Yeah.
This board group right here, we've been pushing that rock up the hill for a long time. The staff, we have a very good and very stable staff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, one thing, sort of curious thing, because of the whole change as a result of the pandemic and the fact that nobody's traveling anywhere anymore, it's actually easier on the staff because they don't have to drive an hour and a half each way to get to the schools. They can communicate with people like this, and they can talk to five schools a day. However, if you read Kathy Maglio's blog post, about homecoming, about coming back into the school, you can see the same theme we've been talking about. Our staff people who do go into the schools, who used to go into the schools and are now starting to do it again, they feel that, you know, wow, I'm back, you know, here I can actually talk to people. You know, people are glad to see me. We have some history. We talk about our gardens, our cooking, our, you know, recipes. There is a real emotional connection. And when they do go into a classroom, you know, they get to interact with kids. Susan, I think you're the only one here who's actually been in a classroom.
Nothing like it, Gary.
Yeah. you know, it's that, you know, you would feel, you know, you'd feel a loss when the kids graduated and went away. I don't think it's the same thing online. I don't know, but I don't think it's the same thing online. And there is that element in education, that emotional connection to your coworkers, to the kids. It's hard to replace that online. You know, on the one hand, we have all these advantages of scale and so forth. We can reach 10,000 kids. We have great instructional material and all of that stuff, but it ain't the same.
And I have to, I'll give some thought to what it is we could do. You know, I support another organization called Posse. They have the Power of 10 meeting annually. You know, they send these students off to the schools that participate, excellent schools around the country. And they send them off in groups of 10. The celebration, when it's announced as to who's going to those schools and the parents are there, it is like, you know, you won the Super Bowl. And it's just wonderful stories that the kids tell, and the students get up and talk about, you know, their experience and just say a few words. But it's a tearjerker kind of ceremony, tears of happiness. We just don't have that, and we cannot replicate it given what we do. Maybe we ought to have some sort of annual celebration that at least amongst ourselves, we recognize that each of us recognize each other, and those who work with us recognize them for what they are doing.
You know, one thing we could do, we could get teachers that we work with to come to something. You know, they're reachable. You get into problem with students, you get into problems, you know, kids, and there's, you know, the law is a problem, and there's all kinds of legal issues in interacting with kids. But we could do an annual event for the teachers that we work with. And that, you know, that's not quite the same as the kids, but it's live people. And a lot of the teachers we work with are really terrific. Maybe that's something we should think about.
That's a good idea.
It would be, logistically, it would be much easier. We know who they are. We know their addresses. We got their phone numbers. And they're, you know, they're adults. They can get in a car and go someplace at night. So that is something that we could do.
And I'm sure they'd bring their stories with them from their classroom. So vicariously, I guess, we could get a little bit of a feel of how things have been going, probably get some input, direct input about what could be better, what we could improve maybe. I think the touchy-feely, hands-on, close-to-people kind of thing is what makes a big difference.
It does. It does.
We have some not thought out very well at all, but awards for teachers or some kind of recognition of them.
We used to do that. Yeah. We used to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. We used to get, let's see. Boy, I can hardly, we used to give out Teacher of the Year awards or, you know, various things. Remember we had those glass, we had various different kinds of plaques that we would award to people. We'd have a whole truckload of plaques that we'd give out. And some people, when, as of the last times I was in anybody's office, some people still have those JFY awards on their walls. So, yeah, I think that is something to think about. We could create a, you know, kind of an event for teachers without getting into too much logistical or legal trouble. It might also be possible to do an event where teachers will bring kids with them so that it's, you know, it's the school bringing the kid and not us soliciting the kid. That might be a possible model, but I think throwing an event for teachers would be fine. Wouldn't create any legal complications, and would get some response.
Well, and invite the local press to this event so the word gets spread a little further about the kinds of things that are possible electronically.
They might also bring other teachers along with them.
Oh yeah,
they might very All right. well.
One other thought on hosting the teachers, what we could do is, or could we do this, have you know, a symposium on using technology.
Yes.
And, you know, how the technology is used in the classroom. So they're just not coming for, you know, a dinner or recognition or something, but there might be an opportunity to learn something and bring in somebody that's, you know, an honored, recognized speaker to present on.
Yeah, our next podcast is going to be with a guy named Michael Horn. We've known him for a while. He was Clayton Christensen's right-hand man at Harvard Business School. And he's agreed to do a podcast with us. We could probably get him to come sometime and do a symposium or something. Well, Otis, Kevin, Susan, thank you so much for this half hour of conversation we've just had. As many times as we have talked over the many, many years that we've been working together, I learn something new every single time. And I look forward to having many more conversations in the years ahead.
We would like to thank JFY Board Chairman Otis Gates and members Kevin McDonald and Susan Dunnigan, along with Executive Director Gary Kaplan, for joining us this month. For more information about JFY Networks, or if you have any questions or comments, please navigate to our website, jfynet.org, which also features a wealth of commentary, dialogue, and free scholastic resources, including this monthly podcast, to support all educational communities. Thank you for joining us. For JFY Networks, I'm Greg Cunningham.